Good afternoon. You're listening to Rumour Jordan on I Heard a Rumour. And it's 3 o'clock, just gone. And my special guest today is Dave South, who has spent many, many years in the music industry as a sound engineer, sound designer, tour manager, and a roadie for various people. He is in the studio and hopefully he is going to be spilling some secrets.
Oh, not too many secrets. Don't push me too far.
Dave, a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Thank you.
And let's start with how you first got involved in the music industry.
I was very lucky. The hometown that I lived in, Hemel Hempstead.
Oh, yeah.
The Vagabonds come from there, from Jimmy James and the Vagabonds.
Okay.
And I was lucky. Their old roadie was giving it up, and they asked me if I could do it. And I was mucking around with local bands, just youth club bands, helping them in with the gear, what have you. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. So we did a few local shows, like the Top Rank Suites and those kind of places. We did the one in Watford. Then we did another one in Dunstable, then another one in Luton, because Jimmy was still pretty big at those days, back in the late 60s. And it grew from there. They asked me to join, and I was their roadie and loved every minute of it. And that's the only thing I ever did, was all through my working career, was the music business.
Okay, so how long did you roadie with them?
For Jimmy, it was about 2 years. The band left Jimmy. I stayed with the band, and they got their own act together as a soul band, and they were called Curly. And they won the Melody Maker competition in 72.
Yeah.
That gave them a good catalytic up the doing lots and lots of work with different acts.
Yeah.
And management took us over. Unfortunately, ripped us off for a lot of money. Another guy took us on and put a lot of money into us, brought us our own sound system, backline, so on and so on. And then we got a lot of work, and we were doing really well. Then the management pulled out a couple of years later, leaving the band and all the crew. That was me and just another guy. There's only two crew. So we said we'd buy the PA off him. So we brought the sound system off him, started doing our own shows with different artists. We was working, going way back with the Pretty Things and a few other bands that you might never have heard of. Then I amalgamated our stuff with another sound company, and then I run that sound company from about 74, 70, mid-70s.
Yeah. So did you, were you self-taught?
Yeah, in those days there was no college, universities, and nothing. No, you just picked it up as you went along.
On the job, basically.
Yeah, because years ago the sound systems were nowhere near as good as they are today. They're fantastic. Wow. Sound systems today are just incredible.
Yeah.
But in them old days, people used to make them up themselves. Buy the speakers, make a wooden box, shove it on there and give it a go.
Incredible.
And that's how it all worked.
Yeah. But that's a skill because... I mean, I don't. Nowadays, it seems like everything is there, set up for you. So you've got to have a basic knowledge and be able, and then work it. But previously, when you were doing it, it sounds to me like it was a lot more complicated.
It was. An old roadie friend of mine who just recently died. He always called us trailblazers. He said we were at the front of it, Southie. He said we started when there was nothing. And we just brought ourselves along and we worked with different acts. And you learn your trade as you go, like any trade, being you're a plumber, carpenter. And it just got better and better. And when I joined this big sound company, I was running it. And that sound company was working with the Kinks, Argent, lots of other acts. I can't think of them at the moment.
Okay, well, it's got here that you worked with people like The Clash, Tina Turner, Rod Stewart, Motorhead, Chris Rea, and many more.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very curious to know what it was like working with each and every one of them, because they are so, their styles, their music, very diverse.
Yeah.
very different kind of characters, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, okay, let's start with The Clash. What was that like? Because it was, were you there right at the beginning, the punk era?
Yeah, I'd just done a tour with a band called Hello, a pop band. We were doing a lot of pop bands in the mid-70s. I worked with Gary Glitter, did his last tour in 75.
Ooh, did you have any inklings when you were working?
No, he was great. Gary was great. Yeah. Real nice bloke, but you don't know what goes on, do you?
No.
And then I was working with Hello. I went to Germany, did a big tour of Europe. Then I come back and my boss said, Dave, I got this band, Clash, I want you to look after them. I said, I've never heard of them. He said, they're a punk band, they're really good, they're a bit like the Pistols. I said, you're joking. I've just been on tour with this pop band, seen these screaming kids. And he said, look, they've got a week's rehearsals up, very local to where we were, actually.
Yeah.
He said, can you take it on? And I said, look, Paul, they've just asked me to go to Japan. I've always wanted to go to Japan. Please let me go. He said, look, do this act. Punk is the thing. I said, all right. So I took him on and we did a week's rehearsals. And I thought, Jesus, what are we up against here? It was not awful, but it was an eye-opener.
In what way?
Well, their attitude. And they couldn't play. Well, you know, that's a lie. They could play a bit.
Yeah.
But they've just done this album, the first album, Clash's first album. And it was selling in bucket loads. It was enormous. So we went on tour.
Yeah.
And I had a great time. They were really good. As people, they were really good. But what they all stood for, I didn't. But they were great blokes.
All anarchy and
yeah, Crash, not so much with Clash. It was with the Pistols, because we did a few shows with the Pistols as well. But Clash were good. Their music was very reggae-fied. It was very rhythmical. It was really good, and I really got into it. And I was with them for about 2 years until they changed management.
Okay.
And it happens, you know, if you change management or they change tour managers, they change this, that and the other, and you lose contact with them. But I was still very friendly with the band. They were really good.
So what would you say was the highs of working with someone like The Clash? Just so, so different. So, I mean, very innovative, very different. The 70s, it was a time, I guess, where people were looking for something different.
Yeah, 70s, as I say, it was coming out of the pop era.
Yeah.
And then it was good. I mean, because we worked. It's a funny thing, because when you get involved with a certain type of music, and we were then with punk, and Clash were one of the top punk bands, you get to know all the other punk bands. They come onto you and they say, can you do our tour? Can you do this? Can you do that? And we were doing festivals and all sorts of stuff. And I didn't like the whole thing, but I liked some of it.
Yeah.
And it was good. And the actual people, when you get to know the people, they were great. The band, Clash band, were great. Really nice people.
Yeah. And were they, with their music, where did they come from? Were they just hanging on the coattails of, say, someone like the Pistols, and they thought, oh, we can do this as well?
No, Strummer, he was with a band called the 101ers in London. And he was pushing, you know, he pushed that side of things. He wasn't hanging on the coattails at all. No, he was up there with it. He had a good head on his shoulders. You know, he was a good bloke, as all the band were. Yeah. You know, they just got rid of their drummer. They'd got a new drummer in when I joined, and he come from the Ships. He was a cabaret drummer.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and all of a sudden he was put in this position.
Yeah,
and he was brilliant. He kept the band together, and he was a real good drummer.
Yeah,
but as I say, the band, their album, they were selling bucket loads of them. Everyone was buying Clash's first album. And the dress, you know, their...
Yes.
Their image, you know, was good as well. Better than the Pistols. Because they were quite smart. Their clothes were quite smart.
The Pistols were a bit kind of rough and vulgar.
Yeah, they were more vulgar. I mean, we did a show. I can always remember it. We did one over in Brunel University in Uxbridge. Yeah. And it was all billed and everything. We set all the gear up and we sound checked and everything. And you get all these hangers on us and they're all gobbing and spitting everywhere and it's horrible. And they walked on stage and they started up and it was like anarchy. They just, the audience mobbed the stage and it was all over and done with in the first number. Wrecked the gear. We had to siphon out what we could and put the great big bill in. Malcolm McLaren did a great big deal with whatever record company, I think it was Virgin, paid the bill straight away, no problem. Because there was that much money around. You know, the punk era, there was a lot of money around. Yeah. They weren't getting it, the bands weren't getting it, but the managements were.
Yeah. It's like they tapped into something that was waking up the young people.
Yeah, they were ready for it.
Yeah, they were fed up with sort of middle of the road sort of.
Well, you've only got
stuff.
To think back in the 70s when, 77, 78, the country weren't in a good state. No. You know, it was a lot of strikes. There was blackouts going on. Yeah. You know, it weren't good in those mid-70s.
They were the voice then. They really were the voice.
Yeah, because they were whipping
the
kids up. Yeah. They were saying, absolutely. Look, you know, this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
And they were good.
Yeah, incredible. So, I mean, okay, you couldn't get further away from The Clash than Tina Turner. So how did that come about?
Yeah, Tina Turner, another one. She was... She had lost a lot of her popularity going back in the 70s again.
Is that to do with her breakup from...
No, that had been long gone because that had happened, I think.
In the 60s.
Her popularity wasn't very big in Europe.
Mm.
So we got a call from an agent saying we'd bring Tina in. It was only 10, 15 shows in the UK, finishing at Hammersmith Odeon, and they filmed it there. It was a real big do. But she was brilliant. The band were brilliant, American, great, good band. And it was just one of those, we only did one tour with her, didn't do it again.
Were you her sound engineer on the tour?
No, I wasn't on that. I was, I just used to rig all the sound up.
Okay.
Yeah, I was one of the technicians, just putting it all together. Because they brought their own Americans over.
Right, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But she was brilliant. She's a nice lady. You know, she spoke to you. You know, she was great.
Yeah. Were you a little bit starstruck? Have you been starstruck with any of the people you've worked with?
I was lucky in the fact my last big band that I worked with was Bill Wyman and the Rhythm Kings.
Oh, right, yeah.
And the Rhythm Kings were made up of... fantastic musicians. You can't get away from it. There was Georgie Fame on Hammond organ. Albert Lee was the guitarist who's played with the Everly Brothers, Emmylou Harris, and so on and so on. Andy Fairweather, though, from Amman Corner.
Yeah.
You know, and he played with everybody. And the producer, he'd been with Clapton for 20 years. And Bill himself, of course.
Yeah.
And then he had... great drummer, you know, a brilliant session drummer, Graham Broad, who did all the 80s session work, and he was the drummer on EastEnders. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
He was the drummer, you know, so, but he never used to say anything about it. He was one of the best drummers I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
And I was used to do backline on that. I was production manager, backline.
Okay, yeah.
And everything else. But, but that was one of the bands because... when Bill played, and if he was doing the Royal Albert Hall, we'd have all these people turn up. Clapton would turn up, Ronnie Wood would turn up, Stevie Winwood would turn up.
Yeah.
And they all turn up. They all turn up to play. It's just amazing. I met loads of great musicians when I worked with Bill.
Yeah. And working with some of the musicians that you've worked with, how would you say was the attitude? Okay, without mentioning any names, unless you can, what sort of attitudes did you get from people? Do you think that the newer bands had more attitude and the ones who were quite established were a bit more laid back?
You get the old boys and they're great. They just turn up, they
because
talk to you, they introduce
to
themselves to you, you know, and they're brilliant. Yeah. You know, you get Ronnie Wood come up and he says, "Hi, Ronnie, what's your name?" I'm Dave, you know. "Oh, great, man. Yeah, great to meet you. Yeah, God, it's great here, isn't it? You know, Royal Albert. Oh, I love working here." You know, and they just start talking to you.
Yeah.
Because they're real nice people. They've been around the block. They know what they're doing.
What about Rod Stewart? What was he like?
He was all right. I didn't get to know him too well. I got a call, asked if I could go up to Barcelona. He was doing a big corporate show up there. And his engineer that he used all the time was out doing Simply Red tour, And they said, can you come in and do the monitoring system? You know, that looks after all the stuff in his ears and everything. So I did that, and, yeah, he come up and said hello. You know, they just come up and say hello to these guys, you know.
But did, like, you hear stories of they, you know, they've got demands. They want a certain type of spring water or alcohol in their dressing room.
I never come across that. You know, the tour managing side of things I did, which a lot of the tour managers get involved in.
Yeah.
You know, the rider side of things and what they need and what they don't need. When I did it, I was doing it for the military when we were sending acts out to the military.
Oh, wow. Was this during the...
It was during the Bosnia conflict.
Okay.
And the Falklands.
Yeah.
And Karen used to do it as well. We used to go out together.
Yeah.
And do all these shows. We used to go down to Falklands for a couple of weeks at a time. And then we'd go to Bosnia for a month,
going around doing all the shows. How was that like getting your equipment, like travelling into countries that were at war? How easy?
The military used to pick our equipment up from our depot and used to take it out. Then we used to fly out, pick it up. And then the whole show, we used to take out dancers, singers, bands, and we'd tour and do military, and they're all on, and we used to go to Ireland a lot.
Yeah.
You know, when the conflict was on in Ireland, it was, they used to sit there. I remember always taking Sheila Ferguson.
Oh, yeah, from the 3 Degrees.
From the 3 Degrees. Yeah. We took her out to Ireland, and we did a place called White Rock, which was a big military camp, but it was completely covered in wire mesh. So when the bombs were being thrown and everything, it just bounced off, and it was a real heavy place. Anyhow, we did a show, and all the troops come in with their rifles, and they all sat there, all in uniform, and we did it about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And all sitting there and everything, and she's singing away, and everything's going well, and everyone's enjoying it, and they're all clapping, and everything's right. All of a sudden, they got a little thing on their ear holes, and they all got up and marched out. She went bonkers. Where comes my audience all wenched out? Like, my audience this and my audience that. We said, sorry, love, you know, that's the way it is. They've all got called out to do a job somewhere. You know, and you get that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but the military, I was there for 7 years. And say, Karen used to do loads of work down at Falklands together. Bosnia, Kosovo. Goodness. She used to take her own show out with her own dancers and her own band, and
do you think it really did boost morale then, having...
Yeah, because in the Falklands in them days, they only got 10 minutes phone call back to the UK per week.
Wow.
There was no internet, there was no nothing.
No. So their only form of entertainment was
When we come down. Yeah. And we used to do maybe 5 shows a year for the military. And it was, the company that I worked for, CSE, Combined Services Entertainments, we used to do all the radio, BFPS radio.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we used to do the whole lot.
Yeah.
We serviced all the military's entertainment needs all around the world.
How easy was it to get acts to go out to countries that were at war?
They weren't at war. This was just like the conflict had happened, especially in the Falklands and in Bosnia. We was all out there as peacekeepers.
Okay.
Yeah, so the troubles had all died down.
Right.
But they had to be out there to train the military that was out there, especially in Bosnia, Kosovo, those kind of places, Macedonia. So we'd go out there and just entertain, because they were teaching them what to do, keeping the peace.
And did you feel safe when you were out there?
Yeah, we had a few skirmishes. I remember going out there with Bjorn again, and we did a big show in Pristina. We finished the show, and everyone said, right, you've got to stay here. Can't go outside. There's a big kick-off. They're all kicking off outside. And we sat in there, and all you could hear was his gunfire and everything going on around us. And I said, right, you can go now. So they hushed us out, and they just shoved us in. Sometimes used to go in bulletproof vehicles, armor plated vehicles, and go back to the hotel or the digs, wherever they put you in. It was there, but you didn't see it. You didn't hear
it.
No.
But it must have been quite sort of heart thumping at times.
It can be. You know, there was, when we used to go to Ireland, Northern Ireland was quite bad when they saw the military vehicles. They used to chuck rocks at the military vehicles and all this kind of thing. And once we were there, we could never say we was working for the military.
I know.
No, because when we took a show out, we used to say that we were over there doing corporate stuff for, yeah, with Makeup Miles or, you know, Cadbury's, yeah, or something
British
like that.
And you're not British.
Not British, and you're not certainly working for the British,
yeah, exactly,
military. Yeah.
So, okay, so let's go right the other spectrum. I mean, going from Tina Turner, Rod Stewart, like Motorhead. Were they rock and roll like The Clash?
They were horrible.
Oh, in what way?
They were just horrible. Again, Paul, the person that I was with when we was running his sound company, Paul Dobson was a guy that owned RSD and owned Studio Master.
Okay.
And Studio Master used to manufacture amplifiers, mixers, everything. They were really big in the music world. Anyway, so he said Lemmy used to be with Hawkwind.
Yeah.
And Paul, many, many years ago, used to work with Hawkwind. And he said, Lemmy phoned me up completely out of the blue. He said, I've got this new band together. And he said, I'm looking for a sound system. He said, I'm looking for a crew. I'm looking for everything. So Paul said, right, leave it with me. He said, I'll supply all the sound for you. Don't worry. He said, we're rehearsing in this little basement down in Chelsea. So me and him went down there, and he put us in this tiny little room, these two rooms put together, with all this massive equipment behind them.
Yeah.
And they started up trying to sing and play, and I was pinned to the back wall. It was awful. But Paul saying, yeah, don't worry, we'll look after you. Yeah, Dave will look after you. Dave's going to be your main man. And Lemmy, oh, nice to meet you, mate, you know, and all this business was going on. Anyhow, we did a week's rehearsal in a place called Manticore, which was owned by ELP. Big rehearsal room in Fulham. It was, yeah, an old cinema. And we put all the system in there and everything, and we took a day putting it all in, make sure it was all right, lights, everything else. Then we turned up, oh, PA's not big enough. He said, oh, I'm going to ruin this. Oh, this ain't right. Anyhow, he said, don't worry about it, Lemmy, we'll get it all together. And he got on stage and started playing, and it was just rubbish. I hated it. And
well, their music was rubbish,
yeah,
their attitude.
Music and their attitude. All these Hell's Angels started turning up.
Oh.
They had all their motorbikes. They brought all their motorbikes round the back and through the fire exits. And all the seats were taken out of this old cinema. The, yeah, balconies were still there. And they had all these big parachutes hanging from the balconies, deadening the sound. And they used to go around on their motorbikes as Lemmy's playing. As this din is going on. And you've got even a bigger din with all the fumes coming up and everything.
Oh, my God, incredible. So you also, as well as working with bands, you worked on West End Productions. Can you tell me some of the ones that you worked on?
Yeah, just quickly, I did Buddy in the Musical.
Oh, wow.
At one time, we had I'll go back a little bit. I used to work for Jim Davison.
Oh, yeah, yes, like Karen.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners that Dave is Karen Noble's husband, because Karen came on my show a couple of weeks ago. So she worked with Jim Davidson as well, didn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. I first met Jim in the 80s. I just come back from a big tour of Australia.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who was a lighting guy worked for Jim. And he said, look, Jim's fallen out with his PA company, his sound company. Can you do it? He said, we got a whole month down at a nightclub, well, not a big cabaret club,
mm-hmm,
in Grays. And he's every night, he said, put the system in there. And he said, if he likes you, he said, you made it. He said, you have plenty of work. Anyway, so we did. He loved it. We got on really well together. And we were real good mates.
Yeah.
But Jim's manager was a guy called Laurie. Him and four others were backers. They financed Buddy.
Oh, okay.
They were the backers for it, and they were looking for more backers. And Jim invested. And he said, I'll only invest if I can do the sound in it.
Yeah.
So we were up in Yarmouth doing a summer season, and during the day we were building everything they needed for Buddy, because all the drum kits, had four drum kits at one stage. We had to put all bugs into the drum kit so there was no mics. We had to do loads of work for it. And as soon as we finished summer season, we went straight down to Plymouth, took all the gear down there, and we were down there for a month because they built all the set in Plymouth as well. So as they were building it, they were putting it up, and we started and we did it. Then we took it up into London. We took it to Victoria Palace. And it stayed there for 10 years or something like that. It was an amazing amount of time.
Yeah. And were you working money. On it for that whole period of
no,
time?
No, I took it down to Plymouth. We built it and we took it into London.
Mm-hmm.
And we put it all into London. And then I was working with Jim and doing other acts. So then we brought engineers in that worked in the theatre world.
Right, okay.
You know, which is a different kettle of fish. They don't know how to set stuff up or anything. All they know is to do is operate. So they were just operators.
Okay.
And we had four crew down there. You know, it was a big setup.
Amazing. So if, just talking about your career in general, what would you say, if you had to pick maybe one or two of your highs within your career?
Yeah, highs, you know, I love working for Karen. Karen's brilliant. She's got an amazing voice. She sends tingles up my back every time we work.
So are you her sound engineer?
Yeah, I'm her everything engineer.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, don't forget, we did big tours in the UK with Karen as well. We did Dusty Springfield tours, Barbra Streisand's, and all our own tours as well. So.
And you don't argue then?
Oh, no. Yes, love. What love?
Know your place.
You want what love? Yes, love.
Brilliant. So, okay, if I ask you about your highs, I've got to ask you about your lows within the industry or people that you might have worked with.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky because I have worked with lots of different acts and I've done lots of different things, festivals and everything. So there's never been a real low. Otherwise, I'd have been out of the industry a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's always been positive.
So what about you personally and your music influences and people that you enjoy listening to?
I like listening to Steely Dan, Doobie Brothers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of American acts. But I like a lot of music. I like classical music. I like all sorts of music.
Yeah.
I was very lucky because I worked with all these different acts. I've been different places. You know, I've been around the world and they've paid for me to go around the world and see these different places, you know.
When you were starting out, though, as a young boy, did you think music was going to be your career?
Yeah, even when I was, you know, I left school when I was 15.
Okay.
No, I left school when I was 14, sorry. I started work when I was 15. But even then, I was going out buying albums, listening to music all the time, seeing bands, seeing local bands, going to, went up to jump on a train, go to London and see bigger bands. You know, I love music. And music's my life. That's all I've ever done, really.
So really, I mean, you're one of these rare people that has lived your dream, you know.
I have. Yeah. I've been very, very lucky man, yeah.
Yeah. So now, so obviously you're here, you're living in Spain.
Yeah.
What are your music affiliations at the moment? Are you still working? Have you got a sound studio?
We've got a recording studio, which we like going in with Karen. We do some work there. You know, she's a great pianist, plays a bit of classical guitar. You know, and we got a drum kit. I'm a very bad drummer, but I can knock a beat out.
Yeah.
And we get by and we do things when we want to, and if we feel like it, and if we don't, we sit around the pool, and if we don't want to do that, we do something else.
Fantastic. What a brilliant life.
Yeah, we're lucky.
Yeah, because you take your career with you forever, if you want.
We did all right. In our days, we did all right because we worked really, really hard in the times when you could work hard.
Yeah.
And we made a few bob and we've got a nice house and we've got a nice lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky.
Do you think, like, you went into the music or you were at the beginning of a lot of changes in music, like in the 70s. So what do you think of the music situation at the moment?
It's not good. You know, I don't like today's music.
For what reason?
The recording of it and the sound of it, it's all squashed. There's no liveliness in it. You can't beat, you know, the old analog days when you could hear cymbals being hit, you know, and now you can't hear nothing. You know, it infuriates me, and the fact that they've ruined it a lot. Technology has ruined recorded music. There's no two ways about it. Live music is still really good because the sound systems today are superb.
And the fact that, you know, years ago you had massive bands. You had four, five, six musicians with the singers. And now it tends to be just them singing with...
Backing tracks.
Yeah, backing tracks. That's it.
It's what it is. Unfortunately, it costs a lot of money to put a band on the road. It costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
Musicians want paying, roadies want paying, trucks, everything, hotels. It's a lot of money.
Do you think it's more fast moving now? It's like music seems to be changing all the time.
Yeah.
And so there's no time to sit still and really appreciate something for what it is at the moment. It's just going so quickly.
Music turned in the 60s, music turned over quick.
Okay.
You know, you get one hit wonders. You think that's a fantastic record, you know. But then you never hear no more from them. And you're getting that right up until today.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real shame, really.
What do you think is the key to longevity then in the music industry?
Writing, performance.
Doing it yourself, writing music yourself.
Yeah, you know, Elton John, he's just incredible. He's the prime example from the British the musician. He is the pinnacle of it, you know. Mm. Eric Clapton, you know, you got all those guys. They are still there and they still will sell out. I know Elton John's packed it in now.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. He was on a world tour for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know. And what I like about Elton John is that even though he's not touring so much, he kind of champions new artists.
And he does, and he's really good.
Remixes or reworks.
Yeah, his old stuff.
Yeah, because he did something recently, I think it was Cold Cold Heart.
It was Cold Cold Heart.
Dua Lipa.
Fantastic.
And I thought that was amazing.
Absolutely fantastic.
Really, really.
Clever man, clever man.
Very, very sort of, his mind has always stayed in that.
No, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And you, a lot of the old boys, they're all out there doing it. Yeah. You know, they're looking after the youngsters. You know, they're good.
Yeah, no, it is good because you could imagine that some of them would think, well, no, I've had my time. I'm just going to lay back and let them find their own way because maybe they had to find their own way. But they're actually championing them.
Yeah, because in the early days of, you know, the Kinks and the Who and all those kind of bands, it was all new energy, you know, and it was a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And everything was new and bright and the equipment was all innovating. You know, it was all coming together slowly.
Yeah.
And those kind of acts are just incredible.
Yeah.
You know, the music and albums that they've done is just astonishing. And today, they can't sustain that, you know.
No.
They just, but Ed Sheeran's about the only one that's really come up and everyone's saying... What a great sound.
Yeah.
You know,
started as a busker.
Absolutely.
And then there. Oh,
brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
We have really, really run out of time.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, don't say sorry because I've enjoyed every minute of it and I could carry on, but we can't. So we are going to say goodbye to Dave South and thank you so much
for coming in. Thanks very much. I've really enjoyed it as well. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
And I know you said you like Steely Dan, so I'm going to play some Ricky, Don't Lose That Number.
Perfect. Thank you very much.